Greetings to each one of you in Jesus' name this morning. Welcome each one of you that chose to come here and worship with us, especially the Denise's family and friends. Thank you for coming, and I trust that you can continue to be inspired as we worship together. So I was thinking and praying about what to share this morning. I had a few ideas at the beginning of last week, and as I looked at them a little more, I just did not feel continued inspiration to preach on those things. And then Wednesday we had some frozen pipes here at church, and the evening service was canceled, and kind of filed that away in my mind and continued to pray and read my Bible. And the Lord did not send any inspiration. So Friday evening I happened to be on the Bible school circuit preaching the same sermon that the brother that was not able to be here on Wednesday evening. I looked over that sermon and I felt God inspiring me to bring that this morning. So pray for me as I share. It's definitely a little more intimidating to share that sermon here than it is in another congregation. The title is The Sunday Morning Free Will Offering. So why would we look at something like this, talking about giving? There's a number of reasons. First of all, the Bible has a lot to say about money, about wealth, about giving. Jesus alone gives many, many warnings and teachings about how to relate to wealth. There's also examples in history. I think every one of us, as we look back in history and see people or groups of people that became wealthy, and it was a major contributing factor in them losing faith and trust in God. And today, we're Christians in America in a wealthy place, a place with many opportunities. And I think it's good for us to stop and think, how are we doing in relating to wealth? Maybe more specifically, preaching in my own congregation as a deacon here, while I don't know how much each one of you gives, it is a fact that just a couple weeks ago, I printed out the offering receipts, and there's no way to do that without seeing all the totals on all of those papers. So I don't know which one was your paper, but it is fairly easy to count how many wage earners we have in the congregation here and to count how many offering receipts I printed. And it just was challenging to me. And it's obvious that there's quite a number of very consistently generous people here, but there's also a number of people here that it does not seem like they're giving much at all. And I think it's important for us, every one of us, sometimes we need a reminder of the value and importance of giving in the life of a Christian. And I just want to share my burden for this message right here in the beginning. My burden is not to try to drum up more money for the church. But my burden is this, that if you're not investing the resources that God has trusted into your hands correctly, you're going to suffer loss. If you're using God's blessings selfishly and to live a selfish life, you're going to face condemnation when you stand before God, and it will not be well with your soul. And so as we go through the message this morning, let's just keep that, the eternal implications of this subject, in the back of our mind. How will it be with your soul when you stand before God to give an account? Will God be able to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant," or will he pronounce condemnation on you because you wasted his resources? It's a big subject. There's a lot of things that I don't have time to cover this morning, and I encourage you, if there's something that sparks your interest this morning, to get your Bible out and dig into what God's Word says about money and giving. The first point that I would like us to consider is, why do we give? As Christian people, why do we give? Are you a giving person because you want to, or is it something that you do because you feel like you have to do? And what is it that makes us want to give? And I think it's because we're transformed. When a person gives their heart to Jesus and surrenders his life to Jesus, Jesus moves into him, and he is a partaker of the divine nature, and a person is transformed from a selfish person that looks out for himself into a person that looks out for and wants to find ways to help other people. And it's because of that transformed heart that Christian people are giving people. And so if you're here this morning and you don't have a desire to give, I think you need to do some serious soul searching. Some other reasons why we give. One of them is because we recognize who is the true owner of all the things that we have. And we know that God is the owner of everything and that we are just stewards of all the blessings that he has given. 1 Timothy 6, verse 7 says, "For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out." It's an obvious truth. We all know it. When a baby's born, they have nothing. And when a person dies, they leave everything behind. And the reality is, in that time from baby till death, God gives us access to material things, and we are responsible to do something. And when we die, we lose access to those material things, and they go to someone else, and it's our time to stand before God and give an account of how we used his things. Another reason why we give is because we love. Because we love God and we love our brethren. If you love someone, how do you show your love? One of the main ways that we show love is by giving. We want to give, and whether it's time or affection or gifts, or there's many ways to give, but we give to the people that we love. 1 John 3, verse 17 says, "But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him?" And this verse makes it obvious that if you love God in your heart, it will compel you to be a generous and compassionate person. Another example of love is the Macedonian churches. 2 Corinthians 8, Paul talks about this. He says, "How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of ministering to the saints." Paul says that these people, he describes their financial situation as deep poverty. These were not wealthy people, yet they wanted to give. They saw a need and they wanted to give, even, Paul says, beyond their power, beyond what was easy and convenient. It was more than just what the leftovers, but they had a burden to give, and they gave sacrificially to the point that it seems like almost like Paul went to them and said, like, "Are you sure you can give this much? Like this, you know, are you sure you're going to be able to make it?" And it says these people responded, praying us with much entreaty, where they went to Paul and said, "No, Paul, take this. There's a need. The brothers, the fellow saints have a need, and we want to give. We want to help." So what was it that made these people want to give? Well, it was because they loved their brethren more than they loved themselves. And that is one of the driving principles of why we should be giving as well. And I think it's also the same attitude that will make Brotherhood Assistance thrive. Rather than seeing Brotherhood Assistance just as a system where I need to give my share to make it work, can we let our hearts be moved with compassion and desire to help and give because we love each other? And to look beyond the numbers, especially with the conference need, and see the people around us, the people in our own church circles that have needs, and let our hearts be filled with love and compassion and give because we care and because we love. Another reason why we give is because we understand the tremendous difference in value between physical or material things and spiritual things. In Luke chapter 12, Jesus tells a story about the rich fool, the man who had a really good crop year and he couldn't get everything in his barns, and he sat down and said, "What should I do?" He said, "I'm going to tear down my barns and I'm going to build greater, than I can sit back and live the good life." And God says, God calls him a fool. He says, "You're rich in material things, but you're not rich toward me." And at the very beginning of that story, Jesus says this. He says, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth." And then after that story, he goes on and he says, rather than worrying about the physical things, you look around. whether it's the birds or the lilies or the grass, God takes care of those things. Rather than worrying about the material things, seek God's kingdom first. Focus on laying up treasure in heaven and trust God to provide for your physical needs. And when we understand the value, the difference in value between material and spiritual things, we will diligently lay up treasure in heaven. There's a quote from Jim Elliot. He said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." I have two more reasons of why we should be giving people, and I think they're good reasons, but these reasons can also be selfish reasons if we're not giving with a transformed heart. The first one is we give because it's expected. And we can say, well, God expects me to give, so I guess I better would give something or he might get angry with me, rather than saying, I love God and I want to give because I know that it's pleasing to him. And it's very clear throughout the whole Bible that God wants his people to be giving people. And we could probably spend several hours talking about giving in the Old Testament and the New Testament and comparing the principles and everything. We don't have time to do that this morning, but in Malachi chapter 3, verse 6, it says, "I am the Lord, I change not." And then he goes on to rebuke the people because he says, "You're robbing from me because you're not giving." And then, yes, there is a difference in the Old Testament and the New Testament system, but I believe that the principles of giving in the New Testament are strengthened rather than being lessened. And another reason why we give is because God will greatly reward. And the selfish side of this is say, well, I give because of what I'm going to get back. You know, I'm giving because so that God owes me something. Or maybe we wouldn't say it out loud, but we kind of have this attitude that, you know, when I get to heaven, then I can, you know, now where's the treasure? You know, I gave, now where's the treasure that you promised? And if that's the spirit of giving that's motivating us, I don't believe that God's going to reward that. But God does promise that he will greatly reward. Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus is talking about almsgiving, he says, "The Father that seeth in secret will reward openly." There's a passage where Jesus is talking to his disciples about those that sacrifice things for the sake of the kingdom, and Jesus promises that they will receive an hundredfold reward. There's just the simple fact that there's the reward of peace in our hearts when we live an unselfish life. Jesus promises that if we invest in his kingdom, that God will provide for our physical needs. It doesn't mean that God's going to provide maybe exactly like we hope that he does, but God has promised that he will take care of us. And then there's the promise of eternal rewards, an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, reserved for us, a secure treasure in heaven. So that's some of the reasons of why we should be or will be giving people. So I want to look a little bit at some things that will be a hindrance to us being giving people. And one of those things is a lack of faith or a lack of trust in God. And if we're afraid that God won't provide, or if we have a lot of what ifs about God, what if God doesn't provide enough or quite like I hope, or what if God treats me like Job and suddenly takes away all my things, and we start being afraid of God and we're afraid that he's out to get us, rather than trusting in God, trusting that he's a good God, trusting that he's a God that wants to give us good gifts. If we don't have faith and trust in God, it's going to be very hard to give. Another thing that will hinder giving is materialism. Materialism is a preoccupation with material rather than spiritual things. Maybe one of the ways, outworkings of this, is comparing my lifestyle with other people's lifestyle, or trying to keep up and having a lot of interest in the latest trends and gadgets. And if that's your interest in life, you're not going to have much to give or a heart for giving. And then kind of linked along with materialism is feelings of entitlement. The belief that one is inherently deserving of privileges or special treatment. You know, I feel like I deserve some of the good things in life. And I just want to remind us this morning that just because we live in America doesn't mean that we're entitled to nice things, to nice vehicles and houses or clothing, to anniversary trips and birthday gifts, or hobbies, vacations, boats and hunting and fishing trips, or the latest electronic gadgets, or little nicety things like espresso machines, or the latest style of decor, or whatever it is of the material things around us that our natural man has interest in. We are not entitled to these things. And it's very easy for us to say, well, this person or that person has it, so I deserve it too. Or maybe we wouldn't be selfish for ourselves, or we say, well, but what about my children? My children deserve nice toys and clothing and gifts and vacations like all their friends have. You know, I owe it to them. They deserve it. And, you know, I can't give right now because, well, I need this or I need to do that. And when you have that attitude of I need, I deserve, you're not going to be a giving person. And if that's the attitude that you have, I think you need to take a look at the rest of the world, because the fact is that there are billions of people in this world that look at this kind of a lifestyle and it is unimaginably rich to them. There's many, many parents that don't even dream of giving their children a birthday gift. They're just glad that they have enough food for their children. And so I'm not saying that it's sin or wrong for us to have or do any of these things. But we certainly are not owed them, and we do not deserve them. They're gifts from God. And if we feel like we deserve an easy life, we're always going to struggle to give generously. So how should we give? What are some principles from the Bible that tell us how to give? Just going to go over a few quickly. One of them is we need to give freely. Jesus said, freely you have received, freely give. God has given us blessings. We should be free to pass them on. We should give willingly and cheerfully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And there's something about willing, cheerful giving that it seems it touches the heart of God. And there's other verses in the Bible that tell us that we should give generously. And we should be giving sacrificially, like the Macedonians did. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 6, the first four verses, talking about almsgiving, he emphasizes that we should give secretly. We shouldn't be doing it openly to get praise for ourselves, but we give in secret, and we let God be the one that decides how to reward us. How else should we give? I think we should plan to give. 1 Corinthians 16 verse 2 says, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him. I think this laying aside speaks of us planning to give. Lay something aside to give rather than just giving what you happen to have left over. And I think we also should start to plan giving now. Don't wait until someday when I have all my debts paid off, or I feel more financially secure, or whatever excuse you want to put in there, because very likely those excuses will linger throughout your whole life. But plan to give and start giving now. Young people, I encourage you to start the habit of consistent giving now. It doesn't get easier. The older you get, the more things you have, more financial responsibilities you have. So how much should we give? And we talked a little bit about this in the adult Sunday school class, but first of all, we need to give everything. We need to give our life, our heart, our soul, everything to God. That is the starting point of giving. And in Paul, when he's talking there about the Macedonians, he says this, they first gave their own selves to the Lord, and then the outworking of giving themselves to the Lord was they wanted to give to other people, and they gave sacrificially to other people. And when we have given our whole life, our whole heart to God, then giving to God financially goes right along with that. So this summer I was at an Anabaptist financial deacon seminar, and one of the speakers there gave, in his talk, he talked about four different kinds of giving. And I just want to share those this morning to help us evaluate ourselves. What kind of a giver are you? The first one he mentioned was token giving. And by this he described it as saying, well, it doesn't feel right if I don't give anything. When the offering basket comes around or whatever opportunity, it doesn't feel right to just pass it on and not give anything. So I give a little bit so that it's not awkward. Just a token amount. The second kind of giving is proportional giving, where I give what I think is my share, or what, you know, I owe a little something, so I just give what I think I owe, and now I've done my part. The third kind of giving is tithing, where we give 10%. So I made so much money, here's 10%, now I've done my duty. And the fourth kind of giving is progressive giving, where we have this attitude: the more God blesses me, the more that I can give. And maybe just to illustrate this a little bit, if a person makes $50,000 and they give 10%, they have $45,000 left. If a person makes $100,000 and they give 10%, they have $90,000 left. And you can go on up through $200,000, you have $180,000 left. If you make $500,000, you have $450,000 left. But the reality is every one of us only needs so much to provide for our own needs. And so if God abundantly blesses us, what do we do? Do we just choose to live a higher lifestyle, or maybe make a bigger stack in our barn? Or do we have a heart to reinvest the blessings that God gives us in his kingdom? And I think the 10% is a good starting goal. If we can, we should give 10%. But our giving should go way beyond that, if God's blessings allow it. That should be the heart of a Christian giver. I already read that verse in 1 Corinthians 16 where God says, Paul says, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered him. It's not just 10%, but we give as much as we can. I think that is the heart that we should have for giving, and that's how we should be looking at how much can I give. A few more points about this. Jesus, when he was standing by the treasury, observed the widow with her two mites, and he says, for they all did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. So Jesus noticed how much they cast in, but he also noticed how much they had left over. And I think that's, God is still that way. He notices and he cares about how much we have left when we quit giving, how much we're keeping for ourselves. And another lesson from the widow with two mites is everyone has something to give. You know, two mites is a tiny amount of money. But she wanted to give, and she gave what she had. And so if you feel like, well, I don't have much to give, don't listen to Satan's voice telling you that what I have, it's too little, it's not worth giving. It's not true. The Bible, Jesus says that God notices even if somebody gives a cup of cold water in his name, that God will notice and reward. So there's nothing that's too small to give. Already talked quite a bit about the example of the Macedonians. And after Paul gives that story and some teaching, he gives some teaching, verses 13 to 15 in that same chapter. He says, for I mean not that other men be eased and ye be burdened, but by an equality now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. So Paul is linking this to when the people gathered manna. If somebody gathered too much, they went around and they found someone that needed a little bit more, and they shared among each other, and everyone had enough. And he's talking about equality in the Church of Jesus Christ, in the brotherhood. And I'm not sure exactly how all this is supposed to look, but I want to share two examples to help us maybe analyze and think about this a little bit. The first one is an example of a brother in the congregation where I grew up. And I think this happened when I was about 10 years old. I was pretty young, had a very innocent view of money, but somehow in a conversation with my older brother, I insinuated that this one family maybe wasn't as well to do as some of the other people in the congregation. And I remember clearly when my brother set me straight and he said, "That's not the way it is." He said, "This man's probably the richest person in our congregation." And it didn't make any sense to me. When I looked at his vehicle and his house and his clothes and the things that his children had, he didn't seem like a rich man to me. But there was something about his example that even at that young age, I knew that when I grow up, I want to be like this man. And in the years since that I've known this man, he has consistently chosen to live a simple life, even though God has blessed him very much financially. The second example is a little bit on the other side. Some sentiments that I heard from another businessman, it went kind of like this. I don't know exactly how he said it, but his reasoning was, you know, "I have the extra stress and financial risk of managing a business, so I feel like it's okay for me to have a few extra things, you know, some extras in life, maybe a little extra vacation time." And while I agree that running a business does have its share of stresses, I don't think that that attitude is right. That just because God gave you the ability or the opportunity to run a business doesn't entitle you to live a higher lifestyle than someone that God has called to just work for someone else. So maybe that helps us think through a little bit this thing of equality. So there's a couple questions for us to think about. What testimony would the children here give about your financial standing and how you relate to money? And what example are you leaving for them about living with prosperity? A few more thoughts on how much should I give. I'm pretty sure most of us at some point in our life have spent some time figuring out how to make more money or finding the best possible investments or maybe how we can save some money or stretch the dollars a little bit in the budget so that we can afford something. And I think those are good things. But how many of us have spent time, sat down, and tried to figure out ways that we can give more? Is there any way that I can stretch the money in the budget a little bit so that we have more money to give? That was a very challenging thought for me. How much should I give? Jesus told the story of the rich young ruler, where he came and asked a question, what should I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus mentioned some commandments to him, and the young man said, "Yeah, I've done that. But what else?" And it says, Jesus, beholding him, loved him. Jesus' response to this man was not to make it hard for him, but he told this young man what he did because he loved him and he cared about him. And he said to him, "One thing thou lackest, go thy way, sell whatsoever thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come take up the cross and follow me." And it says the young man went away sorrowful. It was too hard for him. But how is it with us? Is it possible that Jesus might say the same thing to us? In Luke chapter 12, verse 33, Jesus says, "Sell that ye have and give alms. Provide for yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that faileth not, where no thief approacheth, nor moth corrupteth." So yes, it is possible that Jesus might be calling us to sell things so that we can give. And it might be that God is doing that, asking us to sell or give away something, because that is what is keeping us from following him closely. And it's getting in the way of loving him perfectly. And he's asking us to do that because he loves us. And if you feel God calling you to do that, do it. Don't walk away sorrowful. Just a couple thoughts on how do I decide where to give? There are so many needs in the world. There's so many poor people. And Jesus said it's how it is. So how do we decide where to give? And I think the first step that is that we need to come to is we need to ask God. After all, it's His money, and we should be asking Him how to use it. You know, I'm just a steward. Where does my Lord want me to invest His resources? And then God lays different needs and different burdens on different people's hearts. Some people have compassion for children. Some people have a heart for ministry and providing Bibles, or there's a whole host of God touches different people's hearts with different needs. And I also think there's some biblical teaching that we should have some priorities in our giving. There are some things that we need to give to first that are more important. And I think it's very clear in the Bible that the first priority is we take care of our own. So when it comes to needs in our own families, our own church family, our own brotherhood, our own conference, it is us that are responsible to take care of those needs. It's not the responsibility of the church groups around us to lift money to pay for the medical needs of our members. It's our responsibility to take care of our own. And I think before we give a lot of money to other places, we need to take this into consideration. Another place that we can give, and I would guess quite a number of us are giving toward, is other conservative Anabaptist charities, places like CAM or Mount Zion Literature, Grace Press, and there's many places, Anabaptist Christian people that are ministering to needs around the world. Beyond that, I think there might be a place to give to what I will call some general Christian charities. I don't think it's wrong if you go into Walmart around Christmas time and the man's there ringing the bell if you throw some money in for the Salvation Army. I don't think it's wrong to do that. And I think there's also a place where we could give to what I'm going to call secular charities, something like the local fire company or ambulance. They're there to provide for us if we have a need, and I don't think it's wrong for us to give a donation to that. Or maybe God will lay a burden on your heart to give toward some medical research where it's something that we can give to help other people with their medical needs. Just something for us to think about. I have yet a few more general thoughts here at the end, maybe more on the practical side. The first one is, if we're going to be able to give, there has to be somewhere to give. And sometimes in the church, I think every one of us would much, much rather be the giver rather than the receiver. Because the Bible says it's more blessed to give than to receive. But sometimes God brings circumstances into our life where it's our turn to receive. And it's humbling to do that, yet I think we need to remember that God blesses people for giving. And if you refuse to accept or ask for help from your brothers, then you are robbing them of the opportunity to receive a blessing. And so if God brings circumstances into your life where it's your turn to be the one that receives, I think we need to humbly submit and accept whatever God brings into our life. Another thing about giving, I think it's very important that we teach our children about giving. One of the ways that we can do that is to give our children money to put in the offering. I think that's a good thing. But even beyond that, I think it's very important that our children see their dad or their parents putting money in the offering most Sundays. Otherwise, if dad only puts in occasionally or almost never, won't it teach our children that, well, when I get big, then I don't need to give so much anymore? I think it's something we need to think about. Those kind of little things are telling our children something. And even beyond just giving on Sunday morning, I think it's most important to teach our children about giving and show them a giving lifestyle. They need to see their parents living a giving lifestyle. That, I think, is the key to teaching our children about giving. Maybe some some more practical thoughts on our Sunday morning offerings. One of the things that we left an offering for is for supporting our schools. And school tuition is not cheap. But I just want to take us back in history a little bit to remind us of the importance of our schools. If you look back to when the schools were started, where the public schools evolution came in, and there was men that had a vision for a safer school environment for their children. And these men, they gave more than $700 a month. Some of them sat in prison. Some of them had government officials come out to their farm and take corn and livestock out of their barns because they had a vision for private schools. And the need for private schools is even greater today. The evil in our world and in our school, in our public school system, is far worse than it was 60 years ago. And I think if we can see that and have that vision, it will help us to see that really school tuition is quite cheap. And it should be easy for us, if it's necessary, for us to make a sacrifice to support our schools and pay our school tuition. It should be easy to sacrifice things to make that happen. Whether it's just spending a weekend camping in the backyard instead of taking an extended family vacation, or something like Dad giving up his hunting because he can't afford to take off of work. The reality is that school tuition is the responsibility of us as parents. It is not the responsibility of the rich men in our congregations and churches to provide our children an education. It's our responsibility as dads, just like it's our responsibility to provide food and clothing for our children. We are responsible to provide an education. And while paying our school tuition is tax deductible, you can send it through the offering, it is not a tithe. It's part of the normal cost of raising a family, just like food and clothing. And I know sometimes circumstances come that you can't pay school tuition, and that's okay, because sometimes the big dentist bill comes and then the transmission goes out in the van right at the same time, or whatever circumstances it is, sometimes you can't pay. And I understand that. But if that's where you are, I would encourage you to talk to one of us deacons rather than just not paying and accepting brotherhood assistance without any accountability. Another thing that we left offerings toward is brotherhood assistance. We left quite a number of offerings toward this. And I just want to ask you this morning, how many of you have ever looked into what it would cost if we didn't have brotherhood assistance and you needed to get insurance? How many of you have an idea of what that would cost? I see a couple hands, more than any other congregation where I asked that question. But I would encourage each one of you, it's not hard to find out. Couple phone calls, you can go online and get a quote. I encourage you, find out what it would cost your family or you personally if you had to get insurance. I'm just going to share a few numbers. I was a little hesitant to do this because it varies so widely depending on so many factors. And I think that these numbers that I'm sharing are probably on the low end. But if you personally or your family needed to enroll in a health sharing program of some kind, I think it would cost you, a single person, around $175 a month, which is $2,100 a year. Or if it's a married family with children, I found prices between $640 or $860 a month. That's with a $3,000 deductible. And that comes to between $8,000 and $10,000 a year. And like I said, this varies quite a bit depending on your age and maybe pre-existing health conditions or things like that. As far as car insurance, another, it really varies on your age, your driving record, what for vehicle you drive, but that can easily cost $1,000 plus a year. And I don't know, I didn't check at all into what home insurance would cost. But depending on the circumstances, I think it's pretty easily that many of the families here could be paying $15,000 a year in insurance. And if I added up right, I think the cost of Paying your share in the Conference Brotherhood assistance this past year was around $2,500 a member. So where is the money that we are saving going? I think it's something that we should think about a little bit. But maybe just a word to the young people about Brotherhood assistance. I encourage you to support Brotherhood assistance, and if it's possible, give more than your share. There are people in our churches that can't pay their share. And I think it's a place where you can really help out. And maybe just to help you think through this, what if it had been you instead of Lindell Strickler that was hit by a vehicle, and it was your dad that was left with hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills? These needs are not just numbers. They are real people. And I encourage you to let your heart be filled with compassion and help. Another fact with Brotherhood assistance is that sometimes those that choose to live a simpler lifestyle can end up paying for the needs of those that choose more expensive things. Maybe an example of this is there's two brothers that need another vehicle, and one of them buys a somewhat inexpensive vehicle, maybe around $10,000, and decides to save some of his money as a reserve. And then the next brother spends most of his reserves and buys a $30,000 vehicle or a $60,000 truck. What happens if that brother has a wreck? Who will pay for it? Well, it will probably be the brother that chose a less expensive vehicle. I'm just giving that for us to consider. I think when we make choices in life about the things that we buy and the lifestyle that we live, we should consider how this impacts the rest of my brothers. Another thing about giving is that a small amount given regularly by a group of people can add up to quite a large amount over time. And I shared some of these numbers at our members meeting Monday evening, and a good many of you weren't here, so I'm going to share them again in relation to our new church building. So we put the bucket in the back. There was 13 people that put papers in the bucket. But what about the rest of the congregation? And I just looked a little bit at some of the numbers. If the rest of the people in the congregation that are earning wages give between $50 and $100 a month toward the new building over the next 10 years, that comes to around $360,000. And that's a lot of money. We don't know what the total cost will be, but that's probably close to a quarter of the new cost of the building. So I encourage you, yes, not everyone can give thousands of dollars toward a new church building, but make part of this church building yours. Give what you can. And if we all work at it together, it's going to make a big difference. One more thought yet about the Sunday morning offering. Money is not the only thing that you can offer on Sunday morning. We come here to worship God. We don't come here because we need to put something in the offering. We come here to worship God, and I encourage each one of you to come prepared to worship. Join in the singing. Make the singing an enthusiastic worship experience. Come prepared to share something in Sunday school, something that inspired you that you can offer up for the encouragement or challenge of the rest of the people. And I think if everyone came to the worship service with something to offer, it could change our worship services. So in closing, how are you investing the resources that God has given you? Are you building with wood, hay, and stubble, things that are going to burn? Or are you building with gold, silver, and precious stones, things that will last? What example are you leaving for those that are observing your life when it comes to relating to money? Because someday, each one of us, we're going to give an account. And it's a sobering thought. The choices that we make each day as we live and use the things that God has given to us will have a big impact on our eternal destiny. Let's kneel to pray.